John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Good morning. I am Curtis Rogers filling in for John Clayton as he makes his trek back home from London, where the Seahawks put an absolute hurting on the Oakland Raiders. We've got so much to get to in this one. But let's start with the top five, brought to you by Eastside Funding.
Number one.
I'm so proud of our players and all of the support group that made this travel and the whole way we functioned so smooth. We had a great time. It was like going to a college bowl game. And our players' attitude about it was incredible. They practiced hard. They worked hard. They rested well. They did everything. They did a little bit of sightseeing, but didn't do too much. That led us up to the game, and as we got closer to the game, we realized how much energy there was for the Seahawks here. That was a great crowd, and as somebody said, it was the biggest crowd ever. Playing at Wembley was great, and anybody says anything different, I don't know.
Seahawks absolutely bludgeoned the Raiders 27-3 in London yesterday, and it's got me asking, are the Seahawks a good team? Are they actually good? Because after that 0-2 start, there was so much dirt thrown on this team from so many voices. Heck, even myself. I did not see them climbing out of that 0-2 hole that they dug themselves in the first 2 weeks to get back to 500 at the bye week. And now you look at the Seahawks schedule coming up. At Detroit, a very winnable game. The Chargers, who are a good team right now, they come to CenturyLink Field. You've got a battered Green Bay Packers team coming in November. You've got four of your last five games at home, and right now things are setting up in the Seahawks' favor. Another thing setting up in their favor, the NFC. It is terrible this year. The Seahawks just a half game out of a wild card spot, and the teams in front of them, not much to write home about. A very, very advantageous time for this ball club. Reported 84,000 fans at Wembley Stadium, a record for an NFL crowd, and it was scheduled to be a Raiders home game. That was not the case, as the 12s came out in full force in jolly old London town. The Seahawks 3-4 heading into the bye week, and they're likely to get back some key contributors as well. Ed Dixon, a lot was planned for him, bringing him in as the starting tight end. He is scheduled to come off the PUP list shortly after that bye week. KJ Wright, a guy who has missed the entire regular season, he has been an incredible presence on that defense. A defense yesterday that only allowed 3 points and just destroyed the Raiders' will to continue on in that one. And you bring a veteran like KJ Wright back to this defense, it only spells great things for the Seahawks moving forward. The Seahawks also scored a touchdown on their opening drive, a sight we haven't seen since week 3 of 2016. It's been so long since we've seen the Seahawks march down the field on their opening drive, put 7 on the board, and what a drive it was. Over 7 minutes in length, 14 plays, they went 84 yards. What a message they sent against the Raiders, and really just absolutely asserted their will from the get-go. Running game, once again, solid as it's been. Chris Carson, 59 yards. Rashad Penny getting a bigger chunk of the carries. He went for 43 yards. Mike Davis, 21. And that pass rush yesterday, Frank Clark, 2.5 sacks. Quentin Jefferson, he had a half sack and 2 quarterback hits. Jaren Reed, Brandon Jackson, Shamar Stephen, they each had a sack. Everybody was getting after it yesterday. And it was an incredible all-around team effort win as the Seahawks move to 3-3. Let's get to story number two.
Number two.
Hayden Henry to win it. And he hooked it. No good. Mitchell goes in motion. They hand it off straight ahead for a touchdown. C.J. Verdell wins the game for Oregon.
Ooh, Huskies fans. Yikes. You never want to put the ball in the hands or in the feet of the kicker to decide the game, especially in college, with how untrustworthy kickers are in college. 37-yard attempt for Peyton Henry at the final whistle of regulation goes wide right, and in overtime, the Huskies get on the board first. They kick a field goal, take a 27-24 lead into Oregon's half of that first overtime, and then 3rd and 11. Third and 11, you only rush three, you drop eight. Spelling trouble for the Huskies. A team that has struggled to get a pass rush off, only rushing three isn't going to help that. And you gave Justin Herbert, a guy who has an incredible arm, a guy who is at the top of so many draft boards for 2019, you gave him time, and you gave him time to find an open receiver. They extend that drive on third and 11, and then they punch it in a couple of plays later with C.J. Verdell. But my takeaway from Saturday's action, in terms of the grand scheme of the rivalry between Washington and Oregon, is finally it's competitive. We haven't seen a competitive game between these two teams in so long. You had the Washington blowouts of the last 2 years, 70-21, then 38-3, and then Oregon, those 12 straight victories against the Huskies. None of those were close either. Finally, we see a game between these two schools, these two bitter rivals, be close, and it was an incredible watch if you were a neutral observer like myself, who has no ties to either school. But the Huskies, their college football playoff hopes dashed for another season. Jake Browning will not get back to the college football playoff after he went there in his sophomore season. But the Huskies' Rose Bowl hopes, they're not dashed, but they're going to need some help from their rivals across the state, and that's going to take us to story number three.
Number three.
Chaos in college football. So you start to look at the drawing board, where college game day should go for week eight, and there's really no debate. It's been a long time. 15-year anniversary is this Saturday for that beautiful flag, Old Crimson. It's been traveling around college game day. There's only one place for college game day to go. Oregon at Washington State. We will see you in Pullman.
That is the voice of college game day's Kirk Herbstreit. I don't think there's any more of an expert on where college game day is going to go. But yes, it's true. It's absolutely true. College game day going to Pullman for the very first time in the show's history. It's been 15 years since Old Crimson, the Washington State flag, flying above the set of college game day. And finally, the show will make its first ever appearance on the Palouse. Huskies' misfortune, it helped the Cougs, with both Washington State 5-1 college game day decided this was the best time to head to Pullman. Kickoff slated for 4:30 on Saturday. We've got a lot of Cougs in this building, and you better believe that we have heard about it all day today. We heard about it all afternoon on Saturday when the decision was made. We heard about it all day yesterday. We're very excited for them having the opportunity to see college game day at their alma mater. Jim Moore, Kyle Brown, Taylor Jacobs, shout out to all the Cougs. Jessamyn McIntyre on the sidelines. It's going to be a lit weekend in Pullman. It's going to be wild. Ducks moving up to number 12 in the AP poll. Huskies at 15. Cougs making their 2018 debut in the AP poll at 25. Right now, the game is slated to be a pick'em, according to Vegas, which go either way. I'm thinking the Cougs are going to pull this one off. I think they're going to go to 6-1 on the season. But Oregon, they showed that they are a team that is built in the trenches. They're led by their head coach, Mario Cristobal, former lineman in college football for those Miami teams of the early 90s. Oregon's identity is through their power run game and through just absolutely mauling you at the line of scrimmage. Can the Cougs handle that? I think so, and I think they got the guy under center, Gardner Minshew, who's got that rocket arm. He can throw it over the mountains. I like the Cougs on Saturday. Let's get to story number four.
Number four.
Flies one into right center field. Back at the wall. Are you kidding? Home run. Woodruff. 1-1 in game one.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Finally, some compelling baseball in Major League Baseball's postseason. Both the NLCS and ALCS tied at one game apiece. You heard that home run there from Brandon Woodruff, relief pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers, off of the best pitcher in baseball, Clayton Kershaw, only the third reliever ever did a home run in the playoffs. Compelling baseball. This is what Major League Baseball has needed so badly here in October. We didn't see it at all in the division series. The story of the division series was the incompetence of Angel Hernandez. We're finally seeing it in the American League. You had a back-and-forth affair last night. You have the Astros jumping out to an early lead off of David Price, who is just god-awful in postseason baseball. And then the Red Sox storming back, taking the lead, and holding on for dear life. Alex Bregman flew out to the warning track in left field, which would have tied the game and sent it to extra innings. Now that series heads to Houston, tied one game apiece. NLCS action tonight here on 710 ESPN. We're joining In Progress at 6 as the Brewers travel to the Dodgers in Game 3. Lots and lots of just great storylines in the championship series right now. With a berth in the World Series on the line, you would expect everybody to play their best. That has been Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Let's get to story number 5.
Number 5.
Delayed blitz by New England. Mahomes, corner pattern, ready once. Tyreek Hill makes the catch. Far side, touchdown. Kansas City. The Cheetah burned him last year. He burns him tonight and burns Devin McCourty on a 14-yard corner pattern.
It's not often in a losing effort the losing quarterback is the story of the game, but that's what I'm taking away from last night's Sunday Night Football shootout between the Patriots and Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes looking Tom Brady in the eye and saying, you know what? I'm going to match you, man. You better come with your A game because I'm bringing mine. 24-9 at half, the Patriots led. Patrick Mahomes off to a slow start. He threw no touchdowns, had two interceptions, but in that second half, he came alive, came up with four huge touchdowns, including that bomb to Tyreek Hill in the fourth quarter, giving Kansas City a late lead, but they gave Tom Brady too much time. That's kind of how it's been in the NFL. You give Tom Brady too much time, watch out, because the Patriots are likely going to put 7 on the board. 43-40. First time in NFL history a game is finished with that score. And are we going to be seeing scores like that more often? 3 times this season, teams have lost games where they've scored 40 or more points. That hasn't happened since the 1980s. Tom Brady last night, he became the first quarterback in NFL history with 200 regular season wins, 14 ahead of the next closest quarterback, Peyton Manning. What an unbelievable game it was last night. And with the Chiefs' loss, that means there is only one undefeated team left in the NFL, and that is those pesky Los Angeles Rams. Hey, you can listen to the show via the 710 Sports app. It is driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Up next, we go under further review. Have the Seahawks offseason moves already paid big dividends? We'll be looking at that under further review. That's up next. Curtis Rogers filling in for John Clayton right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app. Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
We're going under further review. Curtis Rogers filling in for the professor, John Clayton. And earlier today on Brock and Salk, the guys were talking about the Seahawks offseason. There were a ton of moves made, a lot of turnover from the previous era of Seahawks into what they are now. And can we already claim that what they did this offseason is a win in and itself? Well, let's hear what Mike Salk had to say about it.
The results of the Seahawks season, we won't know yet, but the offseason was a win. Everything they wanted to accomplish this offseason, I think they've done. They wanted to get back to their physical identity. They've succeeded. They beat the tar out of the Raiders yesterday. They nearly beat up the Rams enough to beat them even though they're undefeated. They beat up Arizona. They beat up Dallas. Outside of the first two games, they have actually done what they said they were going to do.
So that was Mike Salk on what the Seahawks did this offseason. And you look at what they did from the months of March through late July when training camp started. The biggest thing to me and their goal of changing, I guess, not changing the culture, but changing the parts that made the machine go, was to build back that running game and was to get it to where it was in the years where Marshawn Lynch was running like crazy behind an offensive line that wasn't the sexiest by any stretch of the imagination, but they were effective. And we've seen it so far in 2018 that they're getting results. They are putting up great numbers. Look at, you know, we talked about it last segment, the kinds of rushing totals they had yesterday. Chris Carson, 14 carries, 59 yards. Rashad Penny, 9 for 43. Mike Davis, 6 for 21. You've got three guys, well, two guys who have shown this year that they are really running hard, Carson and Davis, and then Penny comes in as the first-round pick. A lot is expected of him, and yesterday probably had his best game in a Seattle uniform, at least best regular season game. It's hard to say that the Seahawks offseason is anything but a success. The draft, very scrutinized because they didn't make the picks that a lot of national experts expected them to make. They went to their own way of figuring out things. And you look at guys like Jacob Martin, Trey Flowers. Those guys have become contributors on a defense yesterday that only allowed 3 points. This has been a draft class that a lot was tasked of them, and they have shown, and they haven't done anything to say like, oh, we shouldn't trust these guys. They've been playing their hearts out, and it's been an impressive last couple of weeks. Mora, the Seahawks offseason, when they were making these moves, did you expect a lot of these guys who were very unheralded coming in, did you expect them to have kind of the starts of their season that they've had? Guys like Jacob Martin and Trey Flowers, other guys like that.
No, and I have to say, yeah, I was a little bit more of a doubter because I thought that everything they had lost in veterans, in Pro Bowlers, was going to lead to maybe a little bit of a lack of leadership. And I really think that Bradley McDougald, and then on the, you know, in the secondary, and then on the defensive line, Jaron Reed and Frank Clark have really stepped up and really taught these young guys really quickly what Pete Carroll and the defense like to do. And then on offense, just I think the change on offensive line is just something that I think we never could have imagined the last few years when we talked about them over and over and over again.
Yeah, definitely not. Guys like DJ Fluker and J.R. Sweezy. Sweezy flamed out in Tampa. DJ Fluker, he's bounced around San Diego, New York, and now he's here in Seattle. And last year, the common wisdom of DJ Fluker is he's not a good offensive lineman. At least that's what people were saying coming into 2018. And now, all of a sudden, Fluker has been an absolute road grader and has been a huge reason as to why the Seahawks offensive line has been as successful as they've been since he has joined the starting lineup. And then Sweezy coming in, joining a team where he knows a lot about what's going on. He's playing under a different O-line coach than he had here. He had Tom Cable initially, and then he's got Mike Solari now. But Sweezy, very much a stabilizing force on the offensive line, and it's good to see him bounce back from a couple of tough seasons in Tampa. And how good was it yesterday to be able to beat the Raiders, not just Oakland itself, but you look at how many ex-Seahawks are on that team. Marshawn Lynch at running back. You had Bruce Irvin on the defensive side of the ball. But then a guy who was very heavily criticized in Seattle over the last couple of years, especially with how ineffective Seattle's run game was, Tom Cable, who is now the O-line coach in Oakland. I got to imagine Pete Carroll probably had a real good time of just taking it to Oakland on the ground and just smashing them in the mouth and really asserting themselves as like, yeah, we're the more dominant team today and there's nothing you can do about it, Tom.
Well, and you can't say that Pete Carroll's not loyal. I think he stood by Tom Cable for about as long as he could get away with without getting himself into hot water.
Yeah.
It's so interesting to see. I think Solari's a great coach, but I think if you look overall at what he's done, he's just been like, hey, we want to be a run-first team. Let's be big and physical up front. And Cable always got too cute with it, trying to take all these guys with upside and convert them and teach them new things. And I like the simple old-school style that they have now. I think it fits much more with what Carroll wants to do.
Absolutely. And it's contagious to the rest of the team. We've seen it in the passing game, where it's opened up things for Russell Wilson. He has, you know, gotten his efficiency back to where we know it can be. He's not being asked to throw the ball 40, 45 times in a game. And he's most effective when he's around 20 to 25, kind of close to 30 pass attempts in a game. And the Seahawks right now are just absolutely running at will. And this is how Pete Carroll has made his money, at least in terms of his teams offensively. And this isn't just something that he's done in Seattle. He did it at USC, tried to do it in New England with Curtis Martin. You know, this is something that he has really just done his entire career, and it's great to see The Seahawks finally get back to where we know they can be offensively, and that's a run-first team that isn't afraid of any defensive line, and it's a team that, you know, when it gets down to it, we saw it yesterday in the fourth quarter, ice in the game, you know, a huge long drive to just put the game out of reach and just take any last chance of hope that the Raiders had and absolutely blast it to smithereens. When we return here, Curtis Rogers filling in for John Clayton, we will hear from the professor in London as he talks to Rashad Penny and Jacob Martin following yesterday's game. That is all up ahead right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton,
live from the Alaska Airlines Studios,
streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Curtis Rogers here, filling in for the Professor John Clayton. You can call me the TA. Text from the 509 came in just a little bit ago. They say, Curtis, were you at Leavenworth's Oktoberfest this weekend? If not, you have a doppelganger. I guess I have a doppelganger. I was not anywhere near Leavenworth. I was actually doing updates during the Seahawks game yesterday. So, no, but shout out to the 509. I guess I'm big out in Leavenworth. But let's go out to London now, which I believe a lot of people call it the Leavenworth of the United Kingdom. A lot of people being me just now. But let's go out here from one of those guys who the Seahawks picked up this offseason, one of those guys who's a lot is being expected of him, and yesterday had himself a fine game, maybe his best regular season game so far. And that's running back Rashad Penny with our very own John Clayton.
Joining us right now is Rashad Penny. It's like, Rashad, how good did this one feel?
Well, it was pretty good. We had a balanced attack on both offense and defense, so we just came out here and play our game, what we usually do. That's the result we get every time.
But that's the thing that's so strange. I mean, for the last week or two, people say, oh, look about the Rashad this, Rashad that. It's like, you know, the times, like in the second half of the Chicago game and the times that you've got a chance to get the ball, you've done well.
I mean, that's on them, what they have to say. I mean, as long as I got these guys over here supporting me and whoever else, you know, that's just all that matters. And then it's just all about getting comfortable, because I think that's the most important part about a running back.
What felt comfortable in the game on Sunday? What really started to feel good?
I mean, just being confident, knowing who you are, knowing why you're playing, and knowing who you're playing with. When you got a great group of guys that I have, I mean, that's the whole part of being confident.
I know you've talked about it. It's a good running back room. Mm-hmm. But now when you look at the guys on the field, how talented is this running back group?
I mean, they can either run you over or they can make you miss. That's what makes it special.
What did you feel the best about your runs? Which runs were the best for you?
I mean, just getting the opportunity. I mean, that was just what it's all about. When you get the opportunity, you can't show up. You got to show up. That's something about this level that's so unique. You know, once you get your shot, you got to keep going.
Rashad, congratulations.
Thank you.
That was first-round pick Rashad Penny joining our very own John Clayton in the locker room following yesterday's game. And you look at Penny and the last two games he has played in against the Cardinals, 9 carries, 49 yards. Yesterday, 9 for 43 against Oakland. He had 2 receptions as well, including that 24-yarder that really gave the Seahawks some great field position. Is Penny starting to turn a corner? Is he starting to kind of get more confidence as the season goes along? Because he's averaging just about 5 yards a carry the last two games he's played. Didn't get any sort of action in that Rams game last week. But as the Seahawks have started to really pick it up over the last month or so, Penny is starting to get there as well. He's starting to gain more confidence, and I would expect him to also become a bigger and better contributor later on in this season. I think a great thing that the Seahawks have done so far is not ask a ton of him, because you've gotten effective games from Carson and you've gotten effective games out of Mike Davis. They've kind of brought Penny along carefully. I don't think they've been reckless in how they've developed him. Yeah, he kind of let them down, getting hurt at the end of the preseason with that hand injury. Or that was more at the beginning of the preseason, but he kind of let them down there. But now we're starting to see Penny have a lot more effective games, and it's great to see. Another rookie who has shown that he can be relied upon is Jacob Martin on that defensive line. Here he is with the professor at London.
turn around and Jacob Martin, it's like, so now you were getting rushed up the field and everybody was kind of flushing to the other side. Talk about what that was able to do.
I was just trying to get the quarterback off the spot, you know, make him a little bit uncomfortable. You know, that's what we talked about all week. You know, is the pass rush has to get there. You know, we have to get this guy off the spot, you know, and for me, learning and watching and working with the great dudes on the D-line with Jay Reed and Frank Clark and Q Jeff, you know, and B Jack and Shamar and all those guys, you know, they bust their tail all week long. You know, and I come in there 2 days a week to try to pick up and try to mesh with the group, so I try to do my best, you know.
Well, that was a one, and then one they missed really bad on that hold because, I mean, you came to the outside, they spun you around and didn't call that one, but of course, the big thing is it flushed everything.
You know, you're going to get some, you're not going to get some. You know, I can't worry about the calls that they don't make. You know, I'm just here to compete, you know what I mean? So it's a race to the quarterback, especially with Frank on the other side. You know, so it's a race to get there. So
tell me now how, because again, a game like this for you, how much is it going to get you higher in the rotation and a little bit more?
I'm not really sure, you know. I'm going to do whatever the team asks me to do, you know, whatever my role is for that week, you know, and try to be the best at that role. So I can't really speak too much on that. That's
all. Heading into the London game, what would you say your role is right now?
Special teams and pass rush, and that's what I do. Special teams, pass rush.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the pressure today can get maybe a little bit more pass rush. Maybe. But, of course, it was good. How good did it feel? Because, I mean, you were just, the whole group was just destroying the rookie tackles.
These dudes on this D-line are the real deal, man. This is the best I've ever been around. You know, it's my first year in the league. And it's some great guys to learn from. You know, Frank is a true, like, he's a real dude in this game, man.
Yeah.
Him and Jay Reed are they're different animals. And watching those guys and how they work and how they prepare every week is amazing.
Well, like with Frank, I mean, how much is it like you? Because, again, same type of bodies, same type of speed, same type of styles.
You know, I try to learn as much as I can from Frank, you know what I mean? Like, he's experienced. He's been doing it for a long time. He has a lot of sacks in this NFL. In this league, against the majority of left tackles. You know what I mean? He only rushes the left side, so he wants to be the best. He wants to rush against the best. You know what I mean? So he's a dude that can show many different looks. You know, I try to pick his brain, ask him questions on how he approaches things, stuff like that, and what he thinks about certain tackles and certain moves to work against guys, so. I try to lean on him as much as I possibly can.
And then finally, how much fun was this game?
It was awesome. We always go out there and have fun, man. That's the goal, man. You can't do this and play this sport and do this for a living if you're not having fun.
So now, are you going to copy Frank and start motivating the crowd after each play and before each play, or are you just going to concentrate on just making the plays?
I'm here to have a good time, man.
Because nobody has a better time than Frank.
Oh, that's
I mean,
awesome.
Frank gets the best.
I'm there for a good time, man. You know, so Frank does his thing. You know what I mean? I'm locked in, ready to go. You know, let the juice that he brings, and let the juice that Jay Reed brings, and let the juice that Q brings, and D-Jack brings, and Coach Norton, and Coach Hurt bring, you know. And ultimately, the energy that the crowd brings, you know, that feeds me. You know, so.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
That was Seahawks defensive end Jacob Martin down in the locker room with John Clayton following yesterday's 27-3 blowout of the Raiders. And you saw Martin yesterday, and Dave Wyman pointed this out on the radio broadcast yesterday, that Martin was getting very, very close to sacking Derek Carr a couple of times. Each time he was getting closer and closer. And a couple of weeks ago against Arizona, Jacob Martin joined Danny David Moore to talk about, you know, just kind of how his first couple of weeks in the NFL has been. And he mentioned that he had a welcome to the NFL moment where he ran into Mike Iapati, the veteran offensive lineman for the Cardinals, and he just absolutely flat-backed Martin. And Martin ended up saying, you know, like, that was very much a moment where I was like, all right, I'm not the most talented guy on the field. I need to figure things out. And we're starting to see him become, you know, a guy who has the potential of being possibly a difference maker on that defensive line, learning from Frank Clark, who had a monster game yesterday, 2.5 sacks, giving Colton Miller the first-round pick of the Raiders. So many fits. That guy is going to be waking up in his sleep for the next couple of days. And believe me, he's going to be sleeping a lot because he's jet lagged. So he's going to be sleeping a lot and then waking up in the middle of the night, seeing Frank Clark just put a spin move on him and just waking up in a cold sweat and just be, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. That defensive line yesterday for the Seahawks. A lot of people wondered where were they going to find the pass rush this season without guys like Bennett and Averill. Well, they're finding it in guys like Jaron Reed and Jacob Martin yesterday, Frank Clark, who's in line for a massive payday this offseason. Seahawks are finding ways to fill out the holes that were left before this offseason, and it's just more testament to how successful the Seahawks months of March through July were, when so many people, myself included, scratched their heads at a lot of these moves and was like, you're not getting a lot back for letting these guys go, and maybe you're letting these guys go for too little. But now we're seeing that John Schneider and Pete Carroll had a plan, and that was to get back to what made the Seahawks a dynasty. Or, well, not a dynasty, as close to a dynasty as you could get in the NFL without actually becoming one. And now, all of a sudden, the foundation is set for the next couple of years when you've got talented guys who are on their rookie deals. I think it's an enviable spot to be in for the Seahawks, especially as the rest of the NFC West continues to make moves and reload. And you've got teams like the Rams where you've got to fight them off now for division crowns. When we get back, we've got Bradley McDougal and Tedrick Thompson joining the show at 11 from London. But let's go behind the lines next. A crazy day for quarterbacks. As great as the shootout was between Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady, that's as bad as the quarterback play was in a lot of games throughout the NFL. We discuss that next. Curtis Rogers filling in for the Professor John Clayton here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
10:45 every day, John Clayton takes you behind the lines. He's above the skies right now on his way back from London. Curtis Rogers filling in for him here. A lot of bad, bad quarterback days in the NFL yesterday. Also some wild ones as well. As we go behind the lines, taking it to Miami, game between the Bears and the Dolphins yesterday. Dolphins win it in overtime on the very last second of the game. Kenyon Drake, running back for the Dolphins, fumbled at the goal line, which would have given the Dolphins the game-winning score. However, they were able to bail him out, getting the field goal at the very last second of overtime, avoiding the third tie in the NFL this season. But Ryan Tannehill left the game yesterday, and they brought in the Brocket, Brock Osweiler, all 6'8" of him. You remember him from Denver. You remember him from the Texans stealing about $70 million from that organization. And you also might remember him for his misspelled tattoo on his bicep, which I remember him for because he's an Arizona State Sun Devil. And I
did not know about that. What is it? What is the tattoo?
It's, it has the wrong form of it's. It doesn't have the possessive form of it. It has what would be it is rather than
it's. What does the tattoo say?
I forget what it says, but you can find it on Google. He has a grammatical error on his tattoo.
That seems about right.
Yeah. So Adam Gase, head coach of the Dolphins yesterday, asked about why they went for Brock Osweiler over Ryan Tannehill, and I believe we have the audio here. Gase sounding incredibly defensive over his quarterback situation.
I don't know. I think there's some kind of like HIPAA law or something like that. They can't talk about. I don't know. I don't sit there and ask him all these questions, and I just know the guy couldn't go today. All right, go ask him. I'm tired of answering this question about this guy. I got it, but you know what? I'm over it. Me and him, we know that he's not right now. Okay. The details of it, we'll keep that to us. You guys don't need to know that.
Wow. Adam Gase sounds like, you know, somebody like a kid, like a 15-year-old, where you ask him, hey, what's up, man?
Nothing. And they know they're caught. So
yeah.
They're like, I don't know. Leave me alone.
Yeah, just leave me alone, right? Like, oh, just get off my back. Jeez. Tannehill, today in Adam Gase's press conference, he said that Tannehill's day-to-day with a shoulder injury, but we will not know anything further until Tannehill throws again. Gase did say that he expects Tannehill to play and start again this season, but he did not sound too happy with those.
Do you think that was just
questions.
The frustration of realizing that, like, last year Tannehill went down and he had to go with Cutler?
Ooh,
this
maybe
year
he's
he
like,
may have to go with Brock Osweiler.
Who would you rather have?
All the former Bronco rejects.
Yeah, Jay Cutler or Brock Osweiler. Who's another Bronco reject that could get out there? Trevor Siemian, is he doing anything?
I don't think he is.
Wow.
Where is he? Oh, DJ found the tattoo. What is
it?
Live life to its fullest.
Live life to its fullest, but it would be
steal
live
70
life
mil.
To it is fullest. So, Brock Osweiler, not a fan of grammar, but a fan of making about $70 million from the Texans organization. Speaking of the Texans, they got a big win over the Bills yesterday, thanks in large part to everyone's favorite worst quarterback, Nathan Peterman, who entered the game as Josh Allen exited with an elbow injury. Peterman, who we all know loves to throw to the other team, not only threw a pick six, but he also threw another interception after that. Here's the pick six.
Peterman!
I can't remember a worse quarterback. And I'm not just saying like worst like first round pick. I'm saying quarterback in the NFL. I can't
the only
remember.
The person I can think of that's maybe embarrassed themselves almost as much as probably Mark Sanchez, but he also made the playoffs, so there was good and bad.
He made it back-to-back AFC Championship games. A lot would have to happen in terms of injuries for Nathan Peterman to lead a Bills team to an AFC title game. Roger Sherman of The Ringer, he tweeted out one of my favorite tweets from yesterday about Nathan Peterman. He said, Nathan Peterman played what's probably the worst game in NFL history last year when he threw six interceptions against the Chargers, four in the first half. And then he says, but that wasn't enough. He wants to be the worst quarterback in NFL history, and every time he plays, he gets closer to earning the undisputed title. I think there is nothing more appropriate to be said about Nathan Peterman and just how bad he is as a quarterback. And I'm sure he's a great guy. I'm sure he's, you know, he's had a lot of success before the NFL, but it is an entirely different game than throwing the ball in, I guess, where did he come from? Is he a Pitt quarterback? I think he went to Pitt. No, University of Tennessee. Yeah, he was a Tennessee quarterback for 3 years, then transferred to Pittsburgh. It's a lot different playing in the AFC East than it is in the ACC. So Nathan Peterman continuing to be just really, really bad. And he didn't even play that long in the game. He came in the fourth quarter and then promptly threw two interceptions. Text from the 509 says, hey, Curtis, lay off Peterman. He helped me secure the win in fantasy football this week. I had the Texans defense. So, yeah, that's a good point. 425 quarterbacks who are the worst ever. They list former USC quarterback Aaron Corr, who started – for USC, I believe the day the Huskies beat USC in Montlake. Jake Locker was the quarterback for Washington that day. He was really bad. He ended up transferring from USC to Richmond, and I don't know if he ever played in the NFL beyond anything after college. So, yeah, a lot of bad quarterbacks. Text in who you think is the worst quarterback of all time, like bench warmer edition. Not you know, who you don't like, but just like statistically who you think is the worst quarterback ever. Another guy who had a rough day yesterday, Marcus Mariota. 11 times he was sacked by the Ravens defense. 11. Like, 5 sacks is a ton.
They finish with more sacks than completions allowed. He only had 10 completions.
Oh, Marcus. That's unfortunate on a lot of levels. I feel like the Titans have done very little to help develop Marcus Mariota. They didn't surround him with talent his first couple of years in Tennessee. Now they finally have a pretty decent running back stable with Derrick Henry and Deion Lewis. They've got an all right receiver in Corey Davis, but it feels like it's been too late. I feel like they ruined Mariota a couple of years out the gate. And now they're kind of trying to make up for lost time. And then
they're following the Colts Andrew Luck strategy.
Exactly. Or, yeah. And now 11 times he ended up on his back on Sunday. That is an indictment entirely on the Titans O-line. Because no defense in NFL history is good enough to routinely get 11 sacks. That is more on the offensive line play than it is on the skills of the defensive line. Now, the Ravens have a good defense, and the Ravens have been a good team this year at times. They've also had a couple of stinkers. But yesterday, that defensive line looked like a mix between the 85 Bears, the Steel Curtain, and the Purple People Eaters. And they were all over the place, destroying anything that the Titans were doing offensively. And then another bad quarterback in the AFC. These are all AFC quarterbacks, too, by the way. Miami, Buffalo, Tennessee. Blake Bortles, he reared his ugly side again. You got to wonder if Jacksonville is thinking about making a move. I saw Teddy Bridgewater's name get floated around. It'd be what, his third time getting traded? He's backing up Drew Brees in New Orleans right now. You got to wonder, could Jacksonville make a move for him? It'd be interesting to see a quarterback get traded that many times. And I don't see what the Jaguars continue to see in Blake Bortles. Maybe it's because they feel like they can't get anybody more talented right now. That's why they continue to put him out there. But yesterday, 15-26, only 149 yards, one touchdown, one interception, seven turnovers in his last two games. A lot of great texts coming in on the text line about who the worst quarterbacks are. They've got Jamarcus Russell. 509 says Jamarcus Russell 1, Ryan Leaf 2, Rick Meyer 3. 206 says Charlie Whitehurst. 206, another 206 number says Drew Stanton's hot garbage. 253 says Dan Orlovsky. He ran out of the back of the end zone. Another 253 number says Matt Leinart. Leinart was not good with the Cardinals. He was amazing with USC, but just not good at all. 360 says another bad quarterback was Jeff Toole, former Washington State quarterback. 206 says the Rams version of Nick Foles. Now, I'll give you that. Just know that Nick Foles slander will not happen on my watch as we went to college together, Bear Down, Arizona.
So, Ryan Mallett was another good one.
Oh, yeah. Ryan Mallett, didn't he show? He showed up to the NFL Combine, like, was it high? And he.
So when he was with the Texans and he was fighting for a job with Hoyer, he overslept.
Yeah, he missed a team flight.
Yeah.
Man, he was
really
bad.
Also threw a bunch of picks.
Yeah.
Some breaking news coming in here. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers have fired their defensive coordinator, Mike Smith.
Oh, Mike Smith, former Falcons head coach. Tampa Bay has done nothing good defensively this season. They are.
Lost 34-29 to the Falcons yesterday.
Yeah, they're just a dumpster fire on defense. They have allowed 173 points, not the most in their division, though. That goes to the Falcons, but the Falcons have also played one more game than the Bucs have this season. When we return, we will head back to London. John Clayton, he'll be speaking to Bradley McDougal and Tedrick Thompson, two guys in the Seahawks secondary who helped shut down the Raiders offense all day long. Do not go anywhere. Curtis Rogers filling in for the professor on 710 ESPN Seattle.